All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to the DFO Rundown Podcast with Frank Saravalli and Jason Greger on DailyFaceoff.com. Delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome to episode 83, the Atlas Hemsky or Matt Benning episode of the DFO Rundown. I'm Jason Greger alongside Frank Saravalli. We had an extended long weekend. Frank, a happy belated Thanksgiving. And man, lots to give thanks for if you're a reporter in the National Hockey League, because there is lots going on right now. Let's get right to, of course, I think the big story, the Montreal Canadiens. You had the story at dailyfaceoff.com that Jeff Gorton is in. And the titles and roles might be a little bit different now for the Montreal Canadiens organization moving forward.
Yeah, it's kind of a fascinating development here for the Montreal Canadiens, because, you know, their owner and Jeff Molson and their fan base has made it clear that they'd like to have a French-speaking general manager in the position. And that may well be the case now, after the new GM is hired under Jeff Gorton. But I think the key here, and we're still waiting for Jeff Molson to address the media later today and to speak and provide more insight and answers. But the key takeaway is that my belief is Jeff Gorton was hired to be the man at the controls. And this is a significant departure from not just the way the Montreal Canadiens have sort of always done it, but also the way that every other NHL team that hires a top level executive to run their hockey operations department, they're flipping it on its head, because typically the person that comes in to be the president of hockey operations, the perfect example is Brian Burke in Pittsburgh, is more of a figurehead, not the guy doing the day-to-day work and making the trades and transactions and roster decisions. He's instead a conduit to ownership and someone that's a public facing, to fans, to speak to fans and the marketplace about what's happening with the team. And in this case, it seems like it's going to be a reversal here, in that whoever is hired to be the French speaking general manager of the Montreal Canadiens will work in collaboration, yes, with Jeff Gorton, but it's Jeff Gorton, an American and an Anglophone, that I believe will be making all the decisions moving forward from the hockey ops department for the Montreal Canadiens. So this, the way I see it, is a workaround, a creative workaround to stop the Canadiens from playing with what was a short deck. And that's really been their big hampering limitation over the last number of decades is that when they go to hire for a position, they're dealing with a much smaller talent pool that's available to them. And it's still a pretty amazing talent pool when you consider just how small that population is across the National Hockey League, but still a significant departure nonetheless, to say nothing of, Mark Bergevin and Scott Mellenby and Trevor Timmins on their way out. Just a massive development for the Montreal Canadiens over the weekend.
Yeah, well, they'll have lots of roles to fill for sure. The instant speculation when the move came out over the weekend and Patrick Waugh's name, of course, a great Montreal Canadian. He's Francophone. He doesn't have any GM experience at the NHL level per se. So I don't know how realistic, that is, especially when
there's no chance.
Yeah. Well, because I don't see him as somebody who would necessarily, work under Jeff Gordon. I'm just not sure that that's in Patrick's DNA.
That was his undoing person. In Colorado, is that he wanted more say in the personnel and hockey ops decisions as the head coach. Yeah. And Joe Sakic at a certain point just said, hold on a second here. Who's the guy in charge? And why do you think that it should be you? And so that's really where that relationship fell apart. And my point on Patrick Waugh is, if it was going to be him, it would have just been him right now from the start. Why even bring in Jeff Gordon?
See, I really could see, Frank, a situation where you bring in someone and, kind of a similar situation when you look at Breezeball in Tampa Bay, right? He was brought in second in command for a long time, worked his way up, and then became the top dog. And I think, Jeff Gordon, if he does this job for 5 years, then their current GM becomes, the official GM in all his titles. And then, as you say, maybe Gordon moves into a figurehead, but that would be a long time down the road.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not anything short term. Jeff Gordon is 53.
Yeah.
And he's not going anywhere. And I think the point is, he's the perfect sort of personality for everyone that knows him well to work in collaboration with someone. He doesn't need all the credit. He doesn't need to be front facing or public facing. And he works well with others in terms of building relationships. So that is certainly part of the expectation. And I think it checks a lot of boxes for the Canadians, not just in the departure from the norm, but also in that he has experience working for a proud Original Six team. This gives him half of the Original Six. He spent a long time in the Boston Bruins front office, was the GM of the New York Rangers, and now goes to the Montreal Canadiens. He knows how teams with tradition work. He gets that part of it, and he's not afraid to dig in and do the work. So I think when you look at the Canadiens and where they're heading in what's been a really difficult season, they have some pieces of talent to build around, which I think is a positive that Mark Bergevin has left this team to a successor in a spot that there's certainly enough to work with, but there's a lot of work still to be done.
Oh, you look at some of the big contracts, like the Montreal Canadiens right now, Frank, are at the top, of course, because of LTIR. And you just look at how many big contracts they have moving forward. Josh Anderson, Brendan Gallagher, Jeff Petrie, obviously Carey Price. Now, Shea Weber's a little bit different because I think he's going to be on LTIR by the sounds of it, maybe, unfortunately. For the remainder of his career. But, they've got some big contracts. Of course, they just lost Kotkaniemi. The way this season's going, it looks like it's going to be one where the draft pick is going to have to be a vital piece of the organization's future. And I think they're going to have to be patient. I think we saw it a little bit with Cole Caulfield. They recognize that, young players that are, 19 or 20 years of age, it's very hard as you're an offensive guy to automatically have success. And offensive guys need to remain with high confidence, put him in the American League, let him light it up for a bit, bring him back to the NHL. I'm going to be curious under Gordon. And, he's somebody who's got some scouting chops, Frank. I think that's going to be the key here for Montreal. Because let's be realistic. If you don't scout well, your team's never winning.
Correct. And I think he's certainly been well respected in the scouting community in terms of being a talent evaluator, a shrewd talent evaluator. So I get what you're saying about the contracts. I guess I would say that this wouldn't be like inheriting another team that has, that is starting with an empty cupboard or nothing. Like, this would be so different than going to Arizona or going to Chicago, even at this point, you know, with an aging Jonathan Taves and, you know, and I know Patrick Kane again will need a new contract, but this, you know, when you look at a guy and you have a building block like a Suzuki, you know, when you have a potential goaltender that follows Carey Price in Caden Primo, and you have, you know, you mentioned Caulfield, and if Ryan Poehling can figure it out, like there is stuff to build around here with Montreal. And then you add in some of those draft picks, they've got some of the sandpaper. Brendan Gallagher is still 29. You know, there's certainly some room to work with here to try and get this team on the right path.
Before we move to San Jose, Frank, quickly, the whole Bergevin situation, you know, Mellaby resigning, you know, because he was promised, I'm heard in some reports that, you know, he was supposed to be the predecessor and be the next, not the predecessor, but be the next GM. Well, here's the risk on that. I would never make that promise if I'm in leadership role, because you don't know what happens 5 years down the road to anybody in an organization. But how it all went down, why'd they botch this so bad, right? Like it leaks out that you're looking for someone before you fire the person.
Yeah, it was certainly an unmitigated mess for the Canadians. Like this could have been handled so much better. And I remind you that it all happened when Marc Bergevin is still, I believe, quarantining from COVID-19. I think he's the first general manager ever fired while dealing with COVID-19 and a positive test. So that part of it is unfortunate. I think in a lot of ways, the writing was on the wall with Bergevin being in the last year of his deal, the Canadians playing so poorly this year. And I think I've mentioned it before on the show. I had a lot of question marks as to whether Marc Bergevin even wanted to come back to the Montreal Canadiens, that he had told people late last season and in the run-up to the Stanley Cup final that might have been his last year with the team. And as much as the writing was on the wall, the way that this weekend played out, like, I think it's left a lot of bad blood because of the conversations that Scott Mellenby had with Jeff Molson about being that American and Anglophone that takes over, maybe not American, but an Anglophone that takes over in that really unique position for the Montreal Canadiens. And instead for it to go to a newcomer and in Jeff Gorton and someone that they didn't even know that the Canadiens were talking to, that all came together quite quickly. But then to leave Marc Bergevin dangling in the wind, you know, in the last 24 to 48 hours before, you know, that all ends up happening, and then cleaning house with Trevor Timmins and the PR man and Paul Wilson, it was a mess. It was handled really, really poorly for a team that does, you know, usually buttons things up on ceremony and pomp and circumstance so well. And so the fact that they botched and bungled this, I think, surprised a lot of people, but they feel like they've now got the person in place that they went out and struck quickly. That's the other point I'd actually like to make about Jeff Gorton is, if you don't think that he's going to be the man at the controls making all the decisions, you know, why at this point in his career, why would he want a figurehead position? Obviously, it would pay well, but if he wants to be the guy that digs in and does the work, he probably could have gone to any one of these next GM openings with teams like Chicago, Anaheim, and eventually Vancouver, not just looking for a GM, but all of those teams are reportedly also potentially in the discussion for president of hockey operations as well. So, there's multiple positions and openings. And that's why another reason why I think maybe this weekend was partly such a mess is that they got a sense that, you know, Gorton would be a strong candidate in one of these other markets to step forward now.
Yeah, it's smart. Hey, you know, you go after it. And if you're firing, because here's the thing, I'm not sure there's any great way to fire anyone. So
no.
I don't excuse how it went. Ideally, you'd like it to go better. But if you feel that, hey, we got to get Gorton before anyone else does, and if that means that some of the guys leaving aren't going to be happy with it, well, you probably will live with that. And we'll see down the road if it pays off. Now, speaking of, you know, distractions and a lot of other things, Evander Kane on the ice last year was the San Jose Sharks' best player. Wasn't even close. He was very good on the ice. And I had a former teammate of his, not in San Jose, tell me, like, early in, like, last summer when, you know, the stuff about Kane all came out. And he said, Evander's biggest issue is he's just so self-centered. He's not like a distraction necessarily as a guy in the room who's yelling at everybody else and causing disruptions. It's just he's a little bit too self-centered at times. And, you know, Kevin Kurz had reported, you know, simple things about not following the wardrobe and, you know, the dress code to games and felt like, well, he had to be different. And that's just one thing where now we can argue if that's something the team should change. But until they do, you've never got to put yourself above the team. But Frank, he's a legit power forward. Clearly his off ice stuff, you know, him and his estranged wife, they have these countering lawsuits that have all kind of gone away and nothing's come of it. So you wonder, at $3.5 million, I would think a lot of teams might be interested. What about you?
No.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
What about two teams? How about?
It only takes one. I mean, that's the thing. So is it out of the realm of possibility? No. But this reporting over the weekend that the San Jose Sharks are willing to eat half on Evander Kane is nothing new.
Yes.
Like, this has gone back to the summer and teams didn't bite then. And that was before the allegations of, the spousal abuse. That was before the gambling allegation. That was before, before the fake vaccine card incident that got him suspended 21 games. Like, the San Jose Sharks players had made it clear last year that they wanted no parts of Evander Kane. They had told management in exit meetings, we don't want this guy back. We don't think we can win with him. Read between the lines of all the things that they've said this year to start the season. You know, positive vibes, positive energy. They don't feel like anything's dragging them down. And the results, oddly enough, for a team that's removed its best player from last season, have been way more favorable, sitting over 500 in points percentage this year and sort of knocking on the door, at least in the conversation of playing meaningful games in March, which is something that they weren't able to accomplish the last couple seasons. So if the team that knows him best wants no parts of him, what makes you think another team would step up and suddenly be willing to take on still that kind of term?
I'm going to throw out a team, a name for you, Frank. A gentleman who has probably the longest history in the National Hockey League of getting people to be better people than they were, or to at least remain to be good people. He has always put the team first. It's never an I in his organization. It's all about what's best for the team. And right now they can't score to save their life. I'm just throwing it out here, Frank. The New York Islanders and Lou Lamoriello. If there's one guy who would not be intimidated, I'm not saying they'll do it, but the team that actually could use him the most is the New York Islanders. And at $3.5 million, he scores you 25 goals, and you have somebody who ensures that he is on the up and up. Because last year on the ice, not a distraction. Everywhere else, 100%. But that's the team that needs him the most.
That is exactly the last team that I would think would be interested in Evander Kane.
Just because of Lou?
Everything that Lou Lamoriello stands for, team first, stickler for wardrobe. He gives his team, at least he used to give his team, Hugo Boss gift cards for Christmas to make sure that everyone was
pretty buttoned nice, up
and looking
pretty
nice.
Pretty good GM.
He's a stickler for punctuality, you know, team first, rules. You know, he checks the knobs of players' sticks to make sure that they're the appropriate width and length so that you can pick your stick up off the ice quickly. Attention to detail is who Lou Lamoriello is, you know, and I'm not even going to throw in the typical cliches, the haircuts and no beards, but I don't see it. I'm sorry. I don't. If you had put a gun to my head and you said, who are two teams that might be interested? I would wonder about Carolina as one, just because they were willing to roll the dice on Tony DeAngelo in the offseason, and they're willing to do anything to make their team better. And I think the big question is, with the team going so well, 853 points percentage, why would you need to take the risk? Like, you don't really need him. So that's one. And then the other is the Florida Panthers, another team that's going really well. Do you need to inject that kind of risk, that kind of question mark into your lineup? But I think they have a tolerance for risk that other teams might not. So, and basically it's just for that reason in and of itself, those two teams have a higher tolerance for risk, in my opinion, in terms of how they do business than others.
Yeah. I believe it might not be right away, Frank, but I believe that Vander Kane will get traded. Some team at some point is going to look and say, man, we need some scoring help. And they're going to believe that, you know what, they'll have the conversations. I'm sure Vander Kane and his new agent group will be, you know, they'll say all the right things. And I think if you have a coach who's on him all the time, right from day one, maybe that benefits him. But I just, in a league that lacks scoring, like, not many teams have six legit top six forwards. They just don't.
This isn't a one-off situation. This has happened just about every place that Evander Kane has gone. And at some point you have to say it's not getting fixed. Like, you could be Mother Teresa, some kind of miracle worker, that you're not going to come in and bring Evander Kane in and solve him. You know, you think back to the way the Sharks brought him into their team, and the rave reviews that we heard before the Sharks signed him to this long-term contract extension that they're now going to pay dearly for. I mean, I just don't see it. And the other part of it too is, you know, if you had said to me, how do you think this plays out with Evander Kane, him going to the AHL? My first guess would be that at some point during his tenure in the AHL, if things go a little bit sideways, that he just walks and says, I'm not playing here anymore.
At which point, they could suspend him and he runs away from all the money.
Correct. And if he didn't have all these creditors after him, I'd say that would probably actually the most likely scenario. But he needs the paycheck. He needs the money. So it's a little bit of a different situation now. And I don't know. My real test and my curiosity with this situation is, what happens if 3 months from now, Evander Kane is still in the AHL? Like, I believe the most likely scenario still is that he's destined for a buyout in June. But that would provide the Sharks with $5 million in real cash savings. So that's actually pretty significant. But until then, there's going to be a real question mark in terms of how he handles his demotion and how he plays it out in the AHL.
Yeah, that's fair. People maybe want a little wait and see.
A character check. How do you handle when the chips are down?
Yeah, I do think, though, the fact, because Joe Thornton was the one who picked him up at the airport, and Joe Thornton's highly respected in that room. And the bigger issues of Kane emerged amongst the team when Thornton left. So I think you need somebody who's a really strong personality, Frank. And I would, Evander, I'm guessing, is you put him in a situation where there's someone who's a real figurehead, like a Rod Brind'Amour. That's a really good example of somebody who was on him to ensure. I think you might have a better chance. Now, the only reason I'm saying I think teams do this is history. They've given lots of other guys second, third, fourth chances. And when you're a good player, you get more chances.
You get 5, 6, 7 chances. Yes. And that's what Evander Kane has bought himself. I think you think back to the other strong personalities that he's played with. He's rebelled or rebuffed against almost all of them. Dustin Byfuglien in Winnipeg, Blake Wheeler in Winnipeg, Andrew Ladd in Winnipeg. I mean, go through his stops. There have been other strong personalities there that no one has really been able to keep him in check.
We should have it fun on, maybe we'll have it do a over under one of our segments with Tyler on a date on when we think Kane is, if he's still in the American League or if he's traded. That would be fun. Now, a little bit of fun. You don't see it very often. Brady Tkachuk was seething as Brendan Lemieux, allegedly bit him. Sure looks like he bit him. I had the marks and everything. And Tkachuk comes out, didn't hold back, was absolutely ripping him, you know, saying no one likes him. He shouldn't be in the team. He begs people to be in the league. And then, of course, Jonathan Quick said, no, we like him. He's fine. I'd rather have him on our team than that kid, referring to Brady Tkachuk. It's unfortunate that the Kings and the Senators don't play each other again this season as they finish their two games in November. But Jarkko Ruutu, Frank, was the last guy I noticed in 2009. He got a 2-game suspension for biting. How many games do you think Lemieux is getting this time? Like, it seems that this is going to be taken a little bit more seriously.
My initial reaction is 8. And I know that sounds like a lot, obviously, with the offering of an in-person hearing via Zoom, which cracks me up because it's not in person. That obviously gives the NHL the ability to suspend for more than 5. I think there's a number of factors in play. One that, you know, this is, he did it twice, according to Brady Tkachuk, bit him twice. And there was really no reason for it. It wasn't provoked. You know, yes, they're wrestling on the ice and they're in a scrum, but this was like Evander Holyfield, like, didn't have anything else to do or didn't know what else to do, so he just chomped down twice. That can't be the answer. That can't work. And I don't know. The two best parts of this entire thing for me, one is that Brady Tkachuk called him a brickhead, which, like, I hadn't heard that in forever, and that really made me laugh. And two, the Gilbert Gottfried video that's been circulating the cameo where he just read the quotes that Brady Tkachuk gave after the game. And I love when Gilbert Gottfried kept calling him Tkachuk. And that was some high quality comedy.
Oh, I'd have to get it. Yes. Now, when Mike Tyson bit Holyfield's ear, not just once, but twice, man, I still remember watching that live and you were like, what is going on?
Like, the world stopped for a few days like when that happened. Like, it was like he took a chunk out of his ear. I remember I was a kid and I woke up the next day and, like, that's all anyone talked about for days.
Oh, wow. I remember watching live and you're just like, what is going on? And he took you know, obviously, hey, to draw blood on someone's hand, like, the thing about biting
is hard to do.
Like, when you look at it from, like, if somebody chicken wings you and knocks you in the head, like, the long-term ramifications of that are much worse, no question. But there's something about biting and spitting on someone. Like, biting is, Frank, you're a parent. I'm a parent. When you have 3 and 4 year olds and they don't really know and they get upset, you're like, don't bite your sister. Don't, like, that's parenting. You don't have grown men in the National Hockey League where you'd be like, Brendan, don't bite Brady. Like, could you imagine, like, what the linesman's saying at that point? Cause you saw Tkachuk, he's in the scrum and he's like, he bit me. He bleeping bit me. And you're just like, I'm sure the linesman's like, what the fuck's going on here right now? He must have just been totally kind of out because you just don't see that. And so I'm with
you. Your confession, I was actually kicked out of preschool for a day when I was a kid for biting.
Of course.
But I was 3 or 4, like you said, and didn't know any better. Oh. And I think you learn at that point right then and there that that's not acceptable, let alone to do it in a National Hockey League game in front of 20,000 people and you know, a few million more that have seen the clip since.
Yeah. Like, it's one where it's like, now maybe Brady Tkachuk has to get a tetanus shot out of this. I don't know.
The COVID-19 vaccine has been mandated. We'll see if they now start putting in the tetanus booster.
There's nothing serious about this as far as an injury goes, but morally, I think it really irritates people almost more than a headshot because you're just like this is a child.
It's a thing new that you're low. Taught.
It's so cutless. I agree with you.
Eight games seems fair. I think it's in that range. I think it's 6, 7, 8. I'd be surprised if it's much more than that. But I think you could make the case that it should be like 10 if you wanted to.
No, 100%. Let's bring in Tyler Ramczyk. We're going to get to the sale of the Pittsburgh Penguins in a little bit. And also the game of the week between Toronto and Colorado. We'll get to that. But first we bring in Tyler Ramczyk. Ty, how you doing?
I am doing fantastic, and I am locked and loaded with another edition of Buy or Sell for you guys. Usually it's fill in the blank on Monday, but no show Friday. I had the questions prepped for Buy or Sell, so I figured, you know, why make more work for myself, right? It's brought to you by DoorDash. Promo code RUNDOWNDD gets you 25% off your first order and no delivery fees. The last time we did Buy or Sell, I had a bunch of questions about teams and their starts to the season. This one is all focused on individual players, actually. So I'm going to grill you guys a little here, starting with Nazem Kadri. I mean, what a season he's having. He had 2 assists in their last game against Nashville. He's never had a point per game season in his career. He might be picking a pretty good time to do it now. Buy or sell on Kadri ending the season with a point per game or better, Jason?
Oh, well, he's given himself a good, what he's got, 27 and 18. To finish with 80 points, man, like McKinnon's out. So that's going to cut down when he comes back. You know, so I'm going to say no. 82 points is really hard. So I'm going to say no. I'm going to say he scores 75, though.
I'm going to sell as well. I mean, it's way above his career norm. His previous high is 61 and 82. I think he might be able to get to 72, 73, but at some point he's going to go cold.
Leon Draisaitl on pace for, well, a lot more than 60 goals, but that's only been done twice since the lockout with Stamkos and Ovechkin. Buying or selling on Draisaitl hitting the 60 goal mark this season, Frank?
Buying. I don't see any reason why he would slow down. He's been at that pace, that sort of number, and knocking on the door the last couple of years. I think he gets there.
Yeah, I'm buying as well, because this is different than Simone Gagné when he had 20 and 20 and back in 2005-06. That was a career year for him, career high. Draisaitl's already scored 50. In the last 4 years, he's got the most goals in the National Hockey League. 50 and 50 games, come on, I'd love to see it, but that's just too hard to do. But I called it a while ago. I thought he's going to get 60, and Ty Stamkos and Ovechkin is the only guys in the last 25 years to light the lamp 60 times.
Okay, just quickly, I'll throw in a bonus one. Buy or sell on him getting more than the 65 Ovechkin had when he did it?
Sell, yeah. I'm going to say 62,
okay.
3.
Okay. One great bounce back candidate this season, Rachel Dory, had a bunch of really interesting numbers on this Friday on the Daily Faceoff show, but Sergei Bobrovsky, I mean, some people did actually, to be fair, see this coming. I think Dom Lucision had it in one of his predictions articles to start the year, but will he finish top 3 in Vezina voting? Frank, you buying or selling on that?
I'll buy.
Okay. Jay?
Well, I'm trying to see who's going to be competing against, right? Like who's Markstrom. You know, Jack Campbell's off to a ridiculous start with Toronto, Jacob Markstrom in Calgary. Huh, I guess that North division wasn't that terrible. but yeah, Bobrovsky, he'll be a finalist for sure.
All right. The fourth one, let's go up to the North here. Kyle Connor, he's on pace for 55 goals this season. Buying or selling on the possibility of Kyle Connor hitting the 50 goal mark, Jason?
You know what? Well, I love offense. I'm a sucker for it, so I'm buying. Kyle Connor is a sneaky good scorer, man. Like you watch a lot of his goals, guys. Like he rarely scores like just average goals. He's just got such a good release. It's very quick and he's extremely accurate. And I think that it's funny. Goals per game across the league aren't up significantly, but more individuals are like it's the same guys who are always scoring. And Kyle Connor, I think he'll become, well, there'll be a few others, but because this year I think we're going to see 3 guys or 4 with 50, so he'll be one of them.
Yeah, I'm going to buy for sure. You look at Kyle Connor, the way that he broke into the league, scoring 31 in his first full season. He's been really consistent and he's looks like he's taking his game to the next level. Not just a sneaky good scorer, a great player, 21 minutes a night for the Winnipeg Jets. He's the real deal.
All right. And to wrap this one up, I haven't talked about our defenseman yet. So let's go there. I was digging through some numbers and a guy who kept popping up at the top for me is Aaron Ekblad. Will Aaron Ekblad come top 3 in Norris voting this season? I mean, there's some talk about Haskinen, talk about Makar, but I feel like maybe Aaron Ekblad deserves to be in that conversation a little bit more. Frank, you buying or selling?
I'm selling. I think he's bounced back in a big way. I think he's been a huge part of what the Florida Panthers are doing, but I just think that there's other defensemen out there that are going to garner more attention. You didn't even mention Adam Fox. Yeah. That's three really good candidates right there between Haskin and Fox and Makar. I just don't see Ekblad breaking into that top three.
Yeah, heck, Victor Hedman quietly, you know, still does what he does. Roman Josi, John Carlson. I like Ekblad a lot too. I think he's going to be in that mix for the Canadian Olympic team as one of their eight defensemen, but I don't see him as a finalist for the Norse.
All right, there you go. That is going to do it for another edition of Buy or Sell, brought to you by our friends over at DoorDash.
Well, Frank, we go from individuals to now ownership. Pittsburgh, they change ownership, of course. The Fenway Group comes in, sale between $850 and $900 million. I don't know the exact number, but Lemieux still part of it. Do you think this ultimately changes very much, or does this just give Brian Burke and Ron Hextall, you know, more leeway to spend money?
I think it ultimately could change things. If you look at how Fenway Sports Group has run their pro sports franchises, they've been very quantitative and analysis based. You know, you don't have to look very far back to think of the Red Sox and Theo Epstein and the group that's followed since then. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. Obviously in the meantime, with the Penguins keeping those guys in place, there's some stability there, but there's a lot of change that's on the horizon for the Penguins when it comes to their roster. Might not be right away. You know, they're going to have some interesting conversations around the trade deadline this year, depending on where they're at in the standings. You know, I don't see that team adding to try and preserve their chances or boost their chances in the playoffs, because even if they get in, you know, what's the likelihood that that team is going to do real significant damage? And so that's the question that they're probably asking themselves. What this is to me is an exit for Ron Burkle, who's staying on in a real minority share, but he injected a lot of capital into that team when he bought it. My belief from my reporting is that he had purchased he put in somewhere around $70 million out of the 99 that was required to buy the team, if I'm not mistaken. They were in a dark spot then. What a bargain deal that was, now looking back on it. But I'm told that he's mostly cashing out with $400+ million now since then. So quite a return on the investment for Ron Burkle. And now when you look at the other facets of this deal and this transaction, there's a land development part of it. They own the arena. So there's lots that goes to it. But it's fascinating nonetheless for a Penguins franchise that for the longest time had been looking for some stability before Mario Lemieux took over. So nice to see him stay in as a minority owner, and Ron Burkle keeps a small slice as well.
Now let's get to the game of the week, Frank. The Toronto Maple Leafs are on fire. They got 12 wins in November. They're 12-2. That's the best month in franchise history, which is a pretty long time for them. And then you got the Colorado Avalanche, who have scored 43 goals in their last eight games. They're 7-1. This is without Nathan MacKinnon. Like, you got two teams firing on all cylinders. That's the game of the week, no question for me on Wednesday. But when you look, like, I think a lot of people expected both teams to be competitive this year. Mm-hmm. Is there one you like better at this? Which team today, if you had to pick to say, I think they're going farther in the playoffs, Colorado or Toronto?
It's still Colorado for me. I mean, here's the thing about the Leafs is that they're now playing so well again and hitting their stride. And the scary part is that Austin Matthews really hasn't even been the goal scoring threat this year that he normally is. He's pretty well below his career average in terms of production. The Leafs are sucking you back in again. They're making you believe that they can be this team that puts it all together. But the thing is, for me, until they go out and do it in the playoffs, you know, this doesn't matter. It's window dressing. And yes, you need to get in, but it's all about what happens when you get in. And yes, Colorado hasn't enjoyed all the success that they'd want to in the playoffs. A lot of it has just been unfortunate timing and circumstance. You think back to the bubble and their goalies going down. You know, you think back to last year and, you know, missing Nazem Kadri again. For me, the way Colorado has played and mostly without McKinnon. Like, you look at the way that Landeskog and Rantanen have purely dominated games at times. That's a real strong sign for the Avs moving forward. And it's funny, I still think Darcy Kemper can be even a little bit better as well.
Oh yeah, Kemper can be much better. You know, Matthews still has 10 goals in 20 games, right? He's averaging over 4 shots per game. You know, I know they're saying maybe his wrist isn't 100% yet, but he's getting the shots off, and he's still on pace to score 41 goals.
Here's the thing about Matthews and his season, as sort of lackluster as it's been for his norm, and especially the tear that he played at last year. He's one hat trick or one 4-goal game away from being top 5 in the league. So
yes,
I still think, you know, if you're looking at the long-term odds board on points bet, I'd still be pretty comfortable putting some money on him in the goals race.
Well, he's a guy that, you know, to score 50, if you know, health has been the biggest thing. And really, when you look at the Maple Leafs, if John Tavares doesn't get hurt last year, do they win in the playoffs? You know, many people could argue that maybe they do. So key injuries, both of these teams, Frank, funny enough, have had, you know, terrible injury history at the worst time in the playoffs the last few years. Like, if Eric Johnson's healthy one year, I really wonder, you know, the year Grubauer in the bubble, and they're down to their third string goalie. So, but that game on Wednesday night, for any hockey fans, I would recommend watching it, because you got
well rested teams too.
Two teams that are just going on, firing on all cylinders right now. I think that could be a electrifying game to watch. You don't get to see a lot of those in the regular season. So fired up on Wednesday. It's a double dose them. And then you got Crosby and McDavid also going at it on Wednesday night. Frank, have a good week. We will talk to you on Friday when Brad Treliving might be by as well.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks for listening to the DFO Rundown with Saravalli and Gregor. Keep it locked on dailyfaceoff.com and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code program.
All right, hockey fans, listen up because we've got something special coming your way this playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and let me tell you, it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game day, you're going to be faced with four questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle. And here's a sneak peek into some of those questions we'll be firing your way. First up, you got to pick the winning team. That sounds simple, right? But there's more. You got to decide if the total amount of goals in the game will be over or under a certain amount, and that's where the real strategy starts to kick in. Next up, you're picking who's going to find the back of the net first, and you're going to want to be careful because that's one that could be cooked early on in the game. And finally, you got to predict which period is going to be the highest scoring. Will it be a barn burner in the first, a shootout in the second, or a nail biter in the third? That's up to you to decide. Now let's talk about prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? For the daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards to treat yourself to some fresh nation gear, and you might even win a jersey from your favorite team. And for the big dogs, those who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Play now at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.